Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, this is going to be sort of a disjointed episode. We're going to talk about five movies this week, but we each only saw three, only overlapping on one.
No, we're overlapping on two. Only one.
I don't think so.
Oh my gosh, that's right. You didn't see the first big one.
You saw the. I don't know if it's the biggest film this week. I guess it is the biggest film this week. Well, we didn't see. In some circles, the biggest film of the week is Super Troopers 2, a sequel to a cult classic. But no, we did not see Super Troopers 2.
Well, and I didn't see Super Troopers 1, so I was not feeling obligated to see Super Troopers 2 because I feel confident that those who saw Super Troopers 1 who really want to see Super Troopers 2 will go see it, and it doesn't really matter what we have to say about it.
It's one of those classics that's just quotable. People in my office quote that movie all the time. But no, you saw, yes, the biggest film of the week, Amy Schumer in I Feel Pretty, and then we're going to move on to a bunch of independent films.
it's a toss-up among those.
So I remember Amy Schumer really as a leading lady from Trainwreck. So this is, and then she was in Snatched with Goldie Hawn. Terrible, awful film. But Trainwreck was really good. Mm-hmm. Where, in relation to those, does I Feel Pretty fall?
It falls somewhere in the middle because it's an average comedy. I give it like a B, a solid B. It's not great. There are elements of it that we've seen before in other sort of body switch kind of films. And so it's good. It's got some very comedic, very relatable moments, but then it has other things that I didn't think tracked all that well. But the overall message about positive body image and confidence actually plays very well, and it's a good message, and it's PG-13 so that it can be seen by the younger teens in addition to adults, and so I think that's a good thing.
So I don't do previews, so I have no idea what it's about, but you just said body switch. Does Amy Schumer switch bodies with somebody?
No, but in her mind, her perception is that her body has suddenly changed. So here's this woman who's this average woman who works for a cosmetic company but works in some dungy part of a satellite office in the IT department. And it's sort of her dream to be, you know, front and center, like as the receptionist at this cosmetic company. And so she ends up bumping her head in a Soul Cycle class. You know how that can happen.
It happens.
And suddenly she comes to, and for some reason, she just looks in the mirror and she looks at herself and she thinks that this wish of hers has come true and she's suddenly been transformed into like the most beautiful creature ever. And she thinks she's gorgeous all of a sudden. And so everything that she does from that moment on, you know, is with this new perception of herself, and suddenly she's got all this confidence, and she goes after her dream job, and she approaches guys, and so it's really just about how that, confidence changed who she was. But there were moments, what didn't track for me is that she's got these best friends in the movie, and, you know, she suddenly, one point she kind of turns into that person that she always ridicules others, you know, that, oh, the gorgeous person who always gets access to things and is the one who's fawned over by others. And so when she sort of falls into that same kind of trap and disregards her friends for a little while or just says things that are really obnoxious, when I wasn't liking her, I was not liking the movie. And then when it kind of comes back around, because guess what? Chances are she'll hit her head again.
Chances are.
And suddenly that changes again what her relationships are and how she sees herself. And so it's about trying to embrace the person that you are regardless of what you look like. But the biggest thing is that she actually is a good-looking woman no matter what. So it's not like it's some ugly duckling, shallow Hal kind of thing where she's 300 pounds and somebody looks at her and is looking at her inner beauty, she's actually, you know, I think just a normal, average, attractive woman. And I think that's what people are going to relate to, is that it's not trying to position her as being some total ugly duckling or awkward woman. She's just kind of this average woman who just kind of dreams, like, what would it be like to actually be one of the beautiful people? And she sort of gets to test ride that a little bit.
You stole my comparison. I was going to ask you, you know, this reminds me of Shallow Hal, where Hal, played by Jack Black, he doesn't get bonked on the head, but he gets Tony Robbins'd, and he can only see the person on the inside when he falls in love with this 400-pound woman who's like Gwyneth Paltrow inside. And it's like, okay, this is like Amy Schumer's gender-switched Shallow Hal.
In a way, but it's also elements of things like The Nutty Professor, where you had Eddie Murphy is like the very heavy Professor Crump who ends up taking some potion and suddenly goes from being this kind-hearted guy to being Buddy Love, like this really obnoxious skinny guy.
Buddy Love.
And so it's got a little bit of that. It's got a little bit of like that idea of 13 going on 30, where Jennifer Garner...
The movie was quirky.
That one's much better. I mean, that 13 going on 30 to me is sort of a standard.
They did like the entire classic Thriller dance in that movie, I remember.
Yeah, which was awesome. That's an awesome movie. I highly recommend going to, you know, renting that one instead. But this one's fine. One of the things that I didn't, that I thought really didn't track was, I'm like, okay, here she sees herself as being basically the size zero beauty. And all toned, and what's interesting, we never see how she sees herself. So they never show you, like when she looks in the mirror, we all see her as she is. So we don't know what she's envisioning that she looks like, but it doesn't work for me that she doesn't have to change up her wardrobe. It's not like she goes shopping for size zero now you're, clothes.
If I had pointed that out, you'd be like, oh, you're quibbling, Charlie. You're quibbling.
No, it's not. Any woman would know, wait a minute, she's really like an average size 10, and what she's envisioning is like a size zero. So how is she just not even thinking about the fact when she gets dressed every morning?
It's like it's the Incredible Hulk never has to, like, change his pants.
That's right. So, you know, decent message. Just solid, average movie.
Yeah, I'm not going to run out and see this one. All right, the one movie we did watch separately, but we watched together this week, is called The Writer. Now, I heard of The Writer earlier this year when it was nominated for 5 Independent Spirit Awards, and it was nominated for Best Feature. So that means it went up against Get Out, and it went up against 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. This little thing I've never heard of called The Writer. And it did win an award there. It won a brand new award at the Independent Film Awards called the Bonnie Award. It's for mid-career female directors. So therefore, Chloe Zhao, who directed The Writer, it's her second feature film after Songs My Brother Taught Me. I don't know if this is because of globalization or it's because people just fall in love with certain locations on Earth, but she's Chinese. She speaks perfect English and went to college in Massachusetts, an all-women's college in Massachusetts, but she's not Chinese American. She's Chinese. And she fell in love with South Dakota. She fell in love with the Badlands.
Yeah.
So her first film took place on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And while she was there, she met Brady. She met, Brady, I forgot what it said. Brady Jandro. And he had an accident. He had a rodeo accident and got a big scar, big gash across his entire head.
She met him before.
That's right, before that happened.
Before the accident, he taught her to ride. That's
and after he had this accident, you know, he was talking, and she said, wait a minute, if you get back on horses, he's a horse trainer, if you do more rodeo, you could die. And he said, I'd rather, you know, this is my life. This is what I do. I'm not alive if I don't do this. And she says, boom, snap my fingers, there's a movie in this. So she made a movie out of this. She says it's not a documentary, but it's not fiction.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in between. And I'm going to guess, we haven't talked about what you feel about this movie. I'm going to guess you found it slow.
You didn't read my review? No. Oh, come on. Well, I posted my review.
Yeah, but I don't like to read your reviews before we talk.
Don't go giving my review a thumbs up if you haven't read it.
No, I haven't, but I'm guessing that you thought it was slow, but for the perfect person.
I didn't say slow. I said it was quiet and raw and authentic, captivating with minimal dialogue, And that as it's one of those movies that the mainstream audience, a lot of people will not exactly embrace, but that the art house filmgoers will absolutely love. And so I acknowledge all of that. And so it is, I don't know, it's not as slow as a lot of the arty ones that you make me watch sometimes, but it's captivating only for Brady, because he is playing a version of himself, and he's surrounded by other people playing versions of themselves, his real father, his real sister, who's somewhere on the autism spectrum, I believe, and then all these townsfolk and others playing versions of themselves. I enjoyed this movie watching Brady, but there were times, and I thought he could pull it off as sort of the actor playing himself. But the others, I sort of felt, okay, now it feels more like either a documentary or a regurgitation of lines by non-actors, and I felt that push and pull a little bit. But Brady himself, you couldn't help but just feel for the guy and know that this struggle was real, even though this is a fact-based drama. It is a hybrid. It's part Western, part documentary, part biopic. It's really hard to separate what the absolute reality is versus what the creative license and the scripting might have involved in this film. So I liked it, but it is definitely an art house film.
Well, Chloe Zhao said she hired only non-professional actors and the family members and the townsfolk for the authenticity, specifically maybe for the accent. There's a very distinct accent in here. I didn't know they spoke like this in South Dakota or around the reservations in South Dakota, and it reminded me a little bit of last year's Wind River, the Cheyenne, Wyoming Indian Reservation accent. They're very similar. Yeah. It's like, I've heard this before, but it's very distinct voice, this sound. And she also, so while she does love these characters, she also loves the landscape. We're talking wide-angle lenses here, so when we're on horseback, we're not in a close-up on horseback. We're on the Great Plains, and you can hear the wind hitting the boom mic, and it looks windy out there, and the storms at sunset. And, oddly enough, this film reminded me of Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. He's like, you're gonna die if you keep wrestling. And he's like, but I'm a wrestler. And he's like, well, you're gonna die if you keep riding horses. And he's like, but I train horses, is what I do. I can't live without it. And it's like, okay, there's some similarities there.
Yeah, and he says at one point, God gives each of us a purpose. For a cowboy, it's to ride. And so it really is all about, what's your purpose if you can't do what you love, if you can't ride, if you can't follow your passion, and if you do, that it could theoretically kill you, because he does. He has this head injury from when a bronco stomped on his skull and he went into a coma and had seizures. And so it really is kind of life or death with not riding again and finding some other way to support his family and to just go on living. And so that, and you meet like the real life, this guy Lane Scott.
The cautionary tale.
Yeah, so you've got the cautionary tale of this guy who's now, I believe he was paralyzed in a car crash, and so this is one of his best friends who is also a rodeo up-and-comer, and so you see just how quickly these young lives can change, and, he doesn't want to become...
You can see what Brady might become if should he get, like, another concussion or something.
Exactly.
He could, like, be hanging out with Lane in that hospital. This film, this tiny little micro-budget film, took the festival circuit by storm. It was at the Director's Fortnight in Cannes. It was at Sundance. It was at South by Southwest. It was at Toronto. You name it. This, the writer hit it, and it's, striking a chord. This is a 96% on the tomato meter, and nobody can relate, really, to a Native American cowboy in South Dakota, but people are actually finding themselves identifying with this guy. And I think it's because of what Chloe does the first, I'd say, 20 minutes of the film. All it is, it's him and his scar skulking around his little trailer there. And there's no plot. You're just you're getting to know the character, and you're just following. And it was like, oh, you know, nature scars in nature, and there's no plot. You have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And you see the accident that he keeps looking at it on his phone, and that's the actual accident. That's the one.
The real actual accident, and that's where I'm not sure it's the whole blurring of the lines of reality and drama. You don't know where this film's going to take you, and you know, I kind of said that. It ropes you in, like the cowboys do, and you stick with it watching Brady, even though you really just have no idea where it's going to take you. And so it is one of those, it's definitely an indie for the indie-loving crowd. They are loving it, without a doubt. But I just think if you're not... Christian Hammaker loves it. Chris Reed loves it. And so you know, and it's a woman director, so you've got a lot of people who are championing it for that. But I just think if you go in and you are more of a mainstream viewer, you just have to go in with your expectations in check. You don't want to go in feeling like you're expecting just the best movie ever, because it does have some flaws that aren't going to track very well with those who prefer a more... sort of traditional narrative. And I did feel that some of the acting just kind of fell a little flat, but he is, you know, Brady Jandro is someone to watch, and it will be interesting to see if he can actually do any other acting. So apparently he's going out for a few other things.
I thought he was very good, very believable playing himself. But I honestly don't expect to ever see him in a movie again.
I don't know,
but oh man, I had a good one here, and I think
the movie that came and went, the Clint Eastwood film that we never saw that had the real guys
15-17 to Paris.
Yeah.
Apparently that didn't work.
And those guys maybe didn't pull it off as well, that no one kind of captivated the screen the way that this guy has been able to. And so I do think it was a bit of a gamble, and I think with this director having found Brady, it paid off, because when you see those staples in his head and you know that those are real, yeah. They are real. So that's just
kind of there's some amazing. There's some sub themes hiding out in here about masculinity, mm-hmm. What's it like to be a real man, a real cowboy, poverty in rural America. This is a marginalized community. And, of course, you shouldn't have time, and the story's not about that, but it circles around it, and that's kind of hanging out on the outside of the atmosphere here, permeating it.
Yeah, so it's an interesting watch, but you just kind of got to keep your expectations in check.
All right, our next film you did not see, and this is one of those I would love, what would you have said? Like, you really genuinely could have liked it, or you could have been like, Charlie, what is wrong with you? And I'm talking about The Endless. The Endless is by a pair that worked together on all their films. This is their third film together that they co-directed. One of them wrote it, one of them shot it, and they both starred in it. Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead star in The Endless. 10 years ago, these two fled a death cult in Southern California, like near San Diego.
Like and a Heaven's Gate kind of thing?
Exactly. They're playing off the Heaven's Gate cult. Okay. There's something to do with space. And they're not having a good time deprogramming. They're marginalized. They do these menial cleaning jobs. They have no friends. They have no family. And the younger one, Aaron, who doesn't really remember the cult that much, and what he does remember is kind of idealized because he was young and everything is awesome when you're young. He wants to go back. He wants to go back to the cult. Not maybe forever, but he's saying, hey, can we go back for a day and just to see what's up? And coincidentally, a videotape arrives in the mail. The cult didn't kill themselves. They're on the video saying, hey, we're still here. And so they go back for a day, check it out, see their old friends, maybe get some closure, say goodbye to people, you know, they cared about in the past, people that cared about them. And we learn, along with them, there could be something to this cult, or commune, or community. They talk about the definition of cult, and it's not really meeting that definition. There's freaky stuff starting to go on that, whoa, these guys might be onto something. And so the whole movie is kind of turns into a mystery. It's like a Lost episode. You don't know what's going on, and it's a puzzle that you're working on with the characters, trying to figure it out. I don't want to talk about any plot, because it's one of those, don't learn about it before you go into it, because there are some whoa moments.
And what was it called?
It's called The Endless. in 2012, and it matches up with some of their previous films, but don't worry, you need not have seen the previous films. Their first film was called Resolution, very small film that hit the festival circuit. It ties into that film, but don't worry, I've never seen it, and I don't need to see it. This one stands on its own, but there is a connection there. Their next one a few years later was called Spring, and this one's called The Endless, and it hit the festival circuit really well. Until yesterday, it was 100% on the tomato meter. Now there's one negative. It's 46 positive and one negative, so I'm in the majority here. It's not necessarily sci-fi, but it's fantasy. There's some supernatural drama involved, and it just makes you think. And it's dramatic. It's familial drama. These are brothers, but instead of, you know, getting the companionship and fellowship that they need from one another, it's more like a boss-employee relationship. Mom died young, so older brother has been almost paternal to younger brother, and they have that sort of relationship. I'm going to drive. You take that bunk. I'm going to take this bunk. Get up. Go to bed. That sort of thing. And no wonder younger brother wants to go back to the cult. They don't treat him that way there. So it's a fascinating film, and I was blindsided.
Yeah, well, the one that I saw instead was also a familial drama, and it's one that I think you would have really liked. And what's really interesting when we have these sort of indie-heavy podcasts is that I think, you know, we might like all these indies, but it's a crapshoot as to who sees what and when, and one's not necessarily better than the other. It's just what you happen to have playing near you, or what you happen to catch, or what piques your interest.
And I think a lot of these are on video on demand.
Yeah, so I mean, they're all sort of, it's kind of like a toss-up with these. And so the one that I saw was called Love After Love,
which I think is already on video on demand.
And it's a Charlie movie, because it's one of those observational dramas.
Ooh, I like
conversation.
Those.
It reminded me somewhat of the movie we saw last week, Who is Kira? Or Where is Kira?
So it's dark?
No, it's not that dark. I mean, but it is that sense of it. It starts, it's a family drama. It starts with the patriarch of this family dies. I think he has like congestive heart failure, COPD or something. And so you see them kind of by his bedside in his final days. And Andy McDowell plays the mom. She's got these two adult sons, one of which is played by Chris O'Dowd. And he's really the main co-star in this. And Chris O'Dowd, he kind of runs the gamut in this film where you're not really sure what to make of his character. It turns out that he kind of goes from being very charming to being a real prick. He really is. His name is Nick, and he's sort of sleeping around with all these women. Then you've got his other brother sort of in the shadow of his big brother. And it's really just about this family trying to reconcile their lives with the loss of the dad, and kind of each one kind of loses their moorings, and the mom ends up trying to, you know, eventually move on with her life and get back in the dating scene. And you've got the two brothers who are struggling. One sort of turns to alcohol, the other just sort of turns to a lot of different women, and just is kind of at times really creepy. And so It's just sort of this fascinating watch, but you would have liked it because it really, it's a combination. It's sort of a bit of a downer, but it reminded me of that other movie that I hated, but you liked, that was the family sitting around the table at Thanksgiving or something last year, and it was another one of those. Yeah, had another K in the title, and was another one of those family drama, dysfunctional family dramas. I'll have to try and...
It's not what you're talking about, but it makes it sound like August Osage County.
No, but I guess it has a little bit of that, too. But it's just a conversation movie. It's around themes of loss and grief and redemption and trying to sort of rebuild, or the family kind of splits apart. But it's family as families do, and when the chips are down, they're trying to come back together. And so it tries to be a little of everything. It's kind of dour, I guess. and sad, but not quite as not nearly as dark as Kira was last week. But that same
nothing as dark as where's
nothing
Kira.
Is that dark. But it has really good performances. I mean, Andie MacDowell looks phenomenal. I mean, at first I thought she and Chris.
It's weird to think of Andie MacDowell with two grown sons.
Exactly, and in fact, it opens with the conversation between Andie MacDowell and Chris O'Dowd, and I was thinking, are they a couple? Or are they going to get together in this film? And then you discover that they're mother and son, and you're like, huh, okay. And then I thought maybe she was their stepmom or something, but I couldn't really, couldn't tell where that was going. But it's just... it's just one of those family dynamic, conversational pieces that is, as I might say, a little slow to watch. But I do think that it's a toss-up. I think any of these indies have a very similar kind of thing going. And if you like the synopsis, if the story grabs you, then that's the one maybe you go and you see, because I don't think any one is necessarily 1,000 times better than the other. It's hard to like pick one over another of any of these indies.
You had me at dour and sad.
Exactly. I figured and I would.
Of the ones I didn't see this week, I would much rather see Love After Love than I Feel Pretty. Sounds like you're right. It sounds like my kind of thing.
If I had to send you to one, I would not send you to the Amy Schumer flick. I would send you to see Love After Love, because I think you would find I Feel Pretty somewhat painful to watch.
And I wish you could remember what movie you're thinking of from last Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it was that one that you really, I don't remember, maybe it was 2 years ago, but you really liked it and you voted it, like you gave it some high ranking, and it was, there was the mother who was drunk and goes off in another room. Oh my goodness, I don't know.
How do I not remember?
I don't know.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, I'll have to look it up later.
All right, finally, the one I saw that you did not see, of course, is in French.
Oui, oui.
And it's called Godard, Mon Amour. Jean-Luc Godard, the myth, the legend, the most notable of the French New Wave directors. He even popped up last year off-screen in Faces Places. They went to go see him, Agnès Varda, and of course he does what he does and doesn't come out of his house. Well, in 1968, in Paris, he was out of his house. He was very notable. He was very famous. Everyone knew what he looked like, and he was just a man in the street. And 68 in Paris was a big upheaval. We're talking stones being lobbed at cops, tear gas, down with the Gaulle, down with the government, revolution. And he feels old. He's turning 37 soon, and the opening voiceover says, nobody, artists should not live past 35. Because once you become an old fart after 35, you're useless. And he just married a 19-year-old. This is based on that 19-year-old's memoirs of that time. They had since gotten divorced soon after that. So he's almost 20 years older than this girl, Anne. And this is directed by Michel Hazanavicius. You know him. He has a Best Director Oscar. He has a Best Picture Oscar for The Artist. His black and white homage to the Hollywood silent era. This is an homage to Jean-Luc Godard. He's celebrating the man, and he's also recognizing his faults. Michel Hazanavicius is married to Berenice Bejot. She earned a supporting actress nomination for The Artist. She was the girl. She's also in this film. Jean-Luc Godard cast his wife in his films. The connections. There are scenes from very famous Godard films that are replicated in this film. He's not copying, but he is revisiting. It's funny at times. You laugh because this guy's a misanthrope and he's mean to his friends. He makes his family and friends miserable. He's that kind of guy. I understand this guy. Yeah. It's also not funny at times. You're showing you the politics of the time, the turmoil, and how this guy, you mentioned Chris O'Dowd in Love After Love, could be a prick. Mm-hmm. Jean-Luc Godard could be a prick.
Well, didn't we get that sense from Faces Places?
Yeah.
He did.
He was mean to her, and he left like a nasty note for her. And he heard about this film. He's like, what do you mean they're going to make my ex-wife's memoirs about me in 1968 into a film? He says, this is a stupid, stupid idea. So, in a brilliant move, Hazanavicius took that quote and plastered it on the movie poster. And all it says is, Godard, mon amour, quote, this is a stupid, stupid idea, Jean-Luc Godard. And I connected with it. I know who he is. Most cinephiles run into Godard eventually, and they he's a very challenging director. He changed cinema, specifically with the movie Breathless, and everyone wanted him to make Breathless too. And he said, "No, I want to make revolutionary cinema." So he made movies with no scripts, and where he was the director in name only, all the decisions were majority made. So his films stunk. There's terrible movies that nobody liked. And he's like, "Well, the old Godard is dead. Old cinema is dead." So no wonder maybe he became too intellectual, too aloof, and lost his audience.
Yeah, well, I'd never heard his name until Faces Places.
Good Lord, so Hannah.
It is that. Well, and I'd never heard of Agnes Varga either. So it's really interesting to, so close together for these pieces of cinema to come out within a year of each other. And so I think if you watch Faces Places and you know of that, and you're a French cinephile as you are, and so it's, I think it's kind of cool to actually reinforce what you're seeing in one film with what you're seeing in another. And so it doesn't bode well for this poor guy's epitaph, I don't think, but hey.
Well, it was nominated for a whole bunch of Césars, the French Oscars. His wife Anne's played by Stacey Martin. We saw her in Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac. She also takes her clothes off this time too. And Godard is played by Louis Garrel. I remember him from The Dreamers, another film about Paris 68. It was released in 2003, though, by Bernardo Bertolucci, who shows up in this film as a character. He was friends with Godard, and he called him on his bullshit. And they had a falling out. This is not a movie for you. I'm not sure you would have dug this movie.
I took one look at the synopsis and the fact that it was French, and I'm like, this is all you. And in fact, Love After Love, a lot of clothes come off in that one too. So even though I think it might be not rated at the moment, it is definitely an R for nudity and sex and drug use. So even three other things that should, you know, make you definitely want to see this, Charlie.
Speaking of R, The Writer was rated R. Why? I saw there's some profanity and there's some weed.
There's some weed, yeah.
And it's rated R. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think it was just for, I think they count up like the number of times the F word is used.
It's ridiculous.
And that, you know, kind of plays into it. But yeah, absolutely.
Nothing about it. This should be PG.
It's the themes are adult themes, but I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with teenagers seeing The Writer.
No.
And I think, I was trying to remember the name of that other stupid movie. Was it Kesha?
I love Kesha.
Exactly.
That was like 2 years ago.
That
was a perfect movie. That was a great movie.
That's what Love After Love.
Oh, you're right. I put that on my top 10 list. You're right.
Good on you. Like, it had a K and it wasn't Kira because that was last week.
Kesha was phenomenal.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I would be all about Love After Love. Yeah. Well, Godard, Mona Moore split the tomato meter. 20 positive, 19 negative.
That's a big split.
I give it a positive. I did like it. But yeah, it's certainly not everybody's cup of tea.
Obviously not.
All right, quick wrap-up. You saw the biggest film of the week, Amy Schumer in I Feel Pretty.
It's your only comedy, new comedy out there, so.
No, Super Troopers 2.
Super Troopers 2, that's not like.
It's a slapstick comedy.
Slapstick comedy. This is not slapstick. This is more your more comedy drama with a little bit of romance. It's your chick flickier, I think, comedy option for the week.
The Writer took film festivals by storm. Some people consider this film, Christian, a masterpiece. I really liked it.
I liked it, and I think both of us did not see it on the big screen. Mm. So we did see a link, and so from, I can understand, it's probably even more engrossing and visually stunning if you happen to be able to see it on a big screen. I don't think it has to be, but I can see how it might be even better if you can get that full impact of that landscape.
However, of the three films I saw this week, I consider The Endless the best film of the week. It is. Yes, it's another indie, festival circuit indie, but it's so original, creative, and quirky, and it just works on so many levels.
And again, I think if you had seen Love After Love, you might feel the same way. And so I do think with these indies, it's kind of, other than your French one that splits on the tomato meter, I think these other indies are all kind of on par this week.
And yes, Godard, Mona Moore, I do I mean, a lot of people have, other than Hannah, heard of the French New Wave and Jean-Luc Godard. And you'll learn a lot even if you don't know who he is. But no, it's not for you.
Yeah, I'm skipping.
All right. Well, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, I am Charlie Jewell. Thank you for listening.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl. Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.